we're live from STS Studios with Was It Really That Good? I got my co-host, Gene Jackson. Gene, where are you hailing from tonight?
All right, here in Coleman, as always.
Coleman, Alabama. Roll Tide, baby, Roll Tide. So, I know you're excited about the NCAA tournament coming up, aren't you?
Oh, my gosh, you can't imagine just how much.
I'm not too excited about it. I follow, baby. I watch the Final Four, and that's it. When it comes to basketball, not a big deal. Just a football guy. But tonight, what we're going to do, or today, or whenever the hell you're listening to this, what we're going to do is I see they have a new special up on the network, and it was all about One Night Stand and about the new ECW coming in, and it was a whole blazing 22 minutes. 22 minutes talking about ECW. I have no idea why they do that, Gene.
I don't either, because I was excited when I saw the title. All right, I guess I saw on Facebook where somebody said that it was going to be on there. And then when I clicked on it and saw 22 minutes, I was like, what? How is anything featuring Paul Heyman talking only going to be 22 minutes, especially when he's talking about ECW? So I watched it, and, you know, for what it was really good, but it, you know, it had potential to be so much better if they had expounded a little more.
I don't know why they do. They do the same thing with where they got the three guys that said, I know, look, it's so hard to come up with the name of that. Three guys sitting around eating dinner. Yeah, that's the name of it. But they do like 20 minutes of that, and you'll have three guys that you would just like Bischoff and was it Bischoff and
Cornette and Michael Hayes.
And Michael Hayes, I could spend, you know, 90 minutes listening to that bullshit. So,
and you know, in Cornette, well, everybody involved, well, I don't know about Hayes, but I mean, Cornette and Bischoff have both said separately that they recorded a couple of hours worth of material and whittled it down to the, what is it, 16 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever
something
it is.
Like that. 22.
Show.
I don't know. I just don't get it. Don't get it at all. So what we did was I messaged you and said, we're going to do One Night Stand from 6-12, 2005, and answer the question, was it really that good? A note here, episode 166, which is the ECW that we did during November, was the highest downloads for this series right here. So I thought, what the hell, we'll just go with another ECW one and maybe get more downloads for that. And also, I thought it would be interesting because after watching that little piece, that little documentary, I was fired up about this show. I was like, man, I remember that. It was so hot, blah, blah, blah. So let's go over it. We started out with Joey Styles coming out, which I thought was, he's like one of the only announcers that you could bring. Maybe Jim Ross, but you could bring him out. And that crowd was so hot just for an announcer coming out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he's going to have an ECW One Night Stand and really, you know, capture the feel of ECW, you got to have Joey Styles. Got to.
Crowd is hot. Foley comes out and joins him in commentary. I mean, Foley wasn't bad at all, but at times I felt like he was trying to keep from getting fired or something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I really could have stood for them to just go, you know, old school ECW and just let Styles do it by himself. But I get it, you know, why they brought Foley out. But, I here in SmackDown and different times they've tried to do it, as much as I love Mick Foley, you know, that is not his forte doing color commentary.
Right, right. At first, and something I noticed throughout this whole show was that the matches were real, real short. I looked at the total minutes, and I'm not going to go over total minutes of every one of the, but the matches are a lot shorter than I remember. I just remember them being fun matches and good matches, but I was just kind of shocked at all at the total of the matches. The first match was Lance Storm with Don Marie against Chris Jericho. I thought it was a really good match, and I thought it was funny with the Lionheart chant.
Yeah, it was a you know, great way to start the show off, and a really good match between the former tag team partners, you know, from the Smoky Mountain era, the Thrill Seekers, and I thought it was a fun match to start the show off with for sure.
They did something with Chris Jericho where it came out not as Y2 Jericho, which I thought was sweet. They make a note that he's doing the Lionheart chant. I thought it was a good start. We got Justin Credible, Jason Interference at the end. Ended up with Landstorm going over, which probably surprised everyone at the time.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about that. But I thought it was, you know, appropriate.
Yeah, solid match. They show a bunch of these, and I kind of fast-forward through some of them. But this first one made me just say, damn, because they were just going over all the showing clips of all the guys that were dead.
Yeah, that was kind of an odd choice. I mean, I get it, you know, memorialize them and whatnot. But, yeah, it's kind of jarring, especially this early in the show, to realize, good Lord, there's, you know, and we've lost plenty since then. But even at that point, there had been a lot of ECW wrestlers that had passed on.
That's right. So the first match, let's think. Everybody's still alive from the first match. Way, yay! Everybody's still alive. we then had a fun match. It's also a short match. It was a super crazy little Guido. He had out Big Guido, JT Smith, and Tracy Smothers, and Tajiri. It was a three-way, right?
Right. And everybody kind of had their entourage, short of super crazy.
And then Sinister Minister was out there, along with Mikey Whipwreck, which I have no idea what he was wearing. God, that looked horrible.
Yes.
Super Crazy did a balcony dive, and the crowd went nuts. It was just all over the place, but it was fun. I mean, everyone seemed to like it. Sinister Minister may have done the worst nut shot I have ever seen.
Yeah, top three for sure. One thing ECW was always very good at, and this was a shining example, like, they were able to put people out in front of the crowd that were, you know, that were over for whatever reason they may be, and get something out of them, get a pop out of them, but not, like, if you would have had to endure a match with Mikey Whipwreck and Tracy Smothers and all those guys, it would have been the shits. But they got in, they hit their high spot, you know, the crowd popped, and then you moved on in this match. And to me, that's the one thing Paul Heyman's always done better than anybody, was just focus on, you know, whatever somebody was good at, get a pop for it, and move on down the road. And we're not having to see all those guys officially in the match. And that freaking balcony dive, every time I see it, just blows me away.
Yeah, just, I mean, a crazy thing is a lot of stuff that was going on right here is, you know, the things that everybody complains about now. I think it's funny because the style was evolving then, which was a long time, 2005 it was evolving. To where it is, and you know, what is it, the basics, the 101 psychology, we didn't see, you know, go for the hot tag and stuff like that. We didn't see any of that kind of stuff. We had Guido got eliminated first, I believe, and then we had, was it Super Crazy? I didn't even put the result of this. Did Super Crazy then?
Yeah, Super Crazy did end up going over. He hit a moonsault on Tajiri and won the match.
Then this match I remembered to be better than it was. Psychosis against Rey Mysterio. I thought it was a little sloppy. I thought it was really funny at the front. Did you catch the conversation between Foley and Styles at the front of the match?
Refresh my memory. I'm sure I did, but it's not.
Well, he's talking about Foley says it's the first time we've ever seen Psychosis without his mask.
Oh, God.
That's what he said. And when he yanked his mask off, he goes, he's showing respect to the fans. And Styles was like, wait, no, you're wrong. And I thought it was so funny that he just pretty much called Foley out there and said, hey, you're wrong. No, he's, you know, he's been without his mask. He just came out with it, blah, blah, blah. I thought I think he called it the Psychosis Guillotine, where he had Rey Mysterio over the barrier, and yeah. Then he jumped. That was just freaking crazy right there.
Yes, that makes me cringe whenever I see that as well. But that's one of the things I've always enjoyed about Joey Styles, because he's the guy that would do that. They would call out even Mick Foley, where JR or somebody would have just kind of rolled with it and let it go by. Styles was like, no, that's not true. that's awesome.
Yeah, he did. He was just like, no, you know. That's not true, and I really liked it. That's what I like about it. At that time, the WWE guys came out. They had this thing, which I remember hating this when it was going on, because they had seats up at the top, and they had all the WWE guys going to come up there and sit down. And I believe I heard JBL say, "Sit down, homo."
Probably.
I really do. And I was like, of all the things that they should have cut out, they probably should have cut that one out. JBL and Angle were really, really good on the microphone here. It was a little too long. I was going to actually put most of it in here, but it was too long. So, guys, you go and watch this on the network. You'll hear JBL probably, man, I wasn't a huge fan of his, but I bet if I went back and watched his stuff now from SmackDown, I would see how good he really was on the microphone and everything.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. Like, I wasn't a fan of it in the moment, but going back now, just appreciating, you know, the mic work and the ability to get heat. He is underrated as far as his heel character and actually having a good run with the title.
Right. Angle also just fantastic on the microphone here. I remember, before there was the scripted stuff, Angle was the man. He really was. And I always said he's one of those guys that I believe, you know, top notch in the ring that I will ever see, you know, in my day. He was really, right now he's a shell of himself because he's probably hurting every time he moves his finger. But, or as we say in the South, finger. He moved his finger. I really loved this. RVD came out, huge pop. I thought RVD was really good for maybe the first 4 minutes, but it seemed like it just struck on and on yes. and on. But, you know, we get the old lights go out, and Sabu comes out. We get Rhino against Sabu, just a fucking crazy match.
Yeah, I actually said that to myself as I was watching it about halfway through RVD's promo. I was like, get the hook, man. Like, this is going on way too long. But he was over. I mean, the crowd was eating it up, so I guess roll with it. But, yeah, I mean, it was definitely a old school ECW feel with, you know, the lights going out and Sabu going in. And I was such a big fan of Sabu back in the day of ECW and all that. And as has happened with just a couple of people, with all these going to conventions, and this isn't even a matter of going to convention, this was actually doing a show with him, Sabu was such a fucking asshole that I find it hard to enjoy his matches now, just knowing what a piece of shit he is.
Wow. You heard it here, he's a fucking asshole. So really,
well, you don't believe me, look at his Twitter.
Oh, yeah, I know. I thought about buying his book, then I said, I can't do this. Some of the stuff that this guy said, I can't give him any money. So good to know that, you know, I mean, we've talked about this before. Some people are just total assholes.
It's not a Virgil or Iron Sheik type thing where he's just trying to get a character over on Twitter. He is every bit the piece of shit that he plays on Twitter in person. Like, and then just every story I've heard about him just compounds that times 100. So,
wow. All right, guys, let's go to commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, back with Gene Jackson. Gene, we got the second part of the show. We had an interview real quick with Al Snow with Head. Man, that shit was over. It really was.
Oh, I know. And I mean, the visual during that time period where they were, you know, from what I was told, bringing the box truck full of styrofoam heads and handing them out to everybody in the crowd before his entrance, before they played the strobe light and that song that is, the name escapes me, but man, he was over, and it was such a sight, you know, with the entire arena, you know, bobbing those styrofoam heads up and down with the lights going and all that. It was quite a scene.
That was just one of those ideas where, you know, when it comes, adding to the idea of Al Snow with Head. Al was on a Conan talking about that gimmick, so it was kind of interesting the way it come, and it actually just grew into what it did. We had the match with Benoit against Eddie Guerrero, two of my favorites of all time. Eddie was in such great shape here. Maybe he just took a little vacation to Mexico, who knows. But he was real puffy, real good shape. This was just a wrestling match, and just a really good, solid wrestling match.
Yeah, it stood out because, like, a lot of, you know, some of the matches on here, you know, it felt like an ECW match, but these guys by this time had become so ingrained in the WWE and you know, the way they had been portrayed. It was one of the few matches that it really felt like a WWE match on the ECW stage, just because, you know, they looked so different and it had, you know, grown so much, you know, in the ring from what they were in their ECW tenure. I don't know. It just kind of stood out to me, but it was a great match, and it definitely was a great pairing to put on this show. If you're going to have an ECW nostalgia show, who better than these two, you know, that really made their name in ECW.
Yeah, I just, you know, every time I see those two guys, I think of how much enjoyment I had of watching them win the belts and the whole nine yards, and just, you know, both of them. I mean, you talking with Eddie dying of an overdose or heart attack or whatever you want to call it, and, you know, Benoit going out the way he did. I kind of quit watching wrestling and was, like, in a real shitty mood when those two guys died for a long time. But it was fun to watch them. They both, like I said, Eddie looked a little bigger than usual. But, yeah, I see what you mean. There was actually psychology in that match.
Exactly.
Yeah, WWE psychology. We had Joel Gertner came out, which I thought was fun. By the way, Joel's on 167, episode 167. Oh, shoot, it's just in. To talk to Eric Bischoff about getting a job. I want to tell you, with the Eric Bischoff thing, this role for Eric Bischoff, where he's just like the shitty asshole, prick, whatever, the biggest heel ever. He is so good at that. Maybe because it's part of his personality, but he is so good at that.
He is, and I always felt like they kind of ended that early. Like, I felt like there was still a lot of mileage out of heel general manager Eric Bischoff, you know, some heel manager, just any number of things they could have did with it. I don't know if it was really his decision to exit when he did, but, man, I thought there was still a lot of mileage to go, because, like you say, he's just so damn dislikable and just hateable, and if it comes off so legit, because, like you say, it is his personality. Being around him in person a couple of times, you can just feel it coming off of him. But always was a huge fan of Gertner. Me and my buddy Mike Hare were always, that was one of our favorite parts of the old school ECW, was listening to his intro for the Dudleys and his, you know, his dirty rhymes that he would come up with. And I was really thrilled when I got a chance to meet him and be around him a couple of times, that he's a really good dude, and not, you know, not the disappointment that I got out of meeting some of the people that I enjoyed and looked up to. Joel Gertner's a hell of a guy.
I agree. We, me and Lance met him at StarCast. He was setting up his stuff, and we introduced ourselves by our names, and he was like, "Y'all are those two guys from the kayfabe sheet." So he remembered us putting letters in of the Observer and shit like that, you know, so that was pretty neat. And being on the show, he was different. Let me just say that. that appearance by Joel Gertner is a little different. So next we had Mike Awesome against Tanaka, and man, that was a crazy, just those two guys just went out and just always killed themselves or killed each other.
And this was no different, but man, you could sense that he was doing some good acting. You could sense there was some legit heat from Joey Styles about the way Mike Awesome left and went to WCW. Like, his commentary come off so salty towards Awesome.
That's what I was going to ask you, if you knew anything about that. I was like, is this a legit shoot? Because, man, he took a shot. He dove over the ring once, and he goes, "Well, too bad he didn't kill himself."
Oh, the irony of that. I was like, The irony of that.
That's what I was going to say, because, you know, they eventually was found. He had hung himself. So
yeah.
So yeah, and it wasn't too much longer after this. So I don't know, Joey Styles. But it was just a crazy match, man. They're hitting each other with brutal chair shots. That move at the very end, where he was trying to do a dive over the top rope, but then he just went head first. Awesome did that. Looked like he killed himself on that one. saying that. I don't mean to be saying that, you know, because committing suicide. I'm...
Everyone will forgive you, but they always got me with that power bomb over the top rope out to the floor. It was just so dangerous as shit because he just pitched him. I mean, you know, and most of the time he landed pretty much where he wanted him to for the most part. But God, there was so much, you know, room for that to go wrong, and always just cringed whenever those two guys were in the rings. Like I said, they just beat the shit out of each other. Those chair shots were just god awful brutal.
So those anything to what they're doing, just keep me away from it. Here's a little gimmick that I do when we're doing Observing the Observer, but I want to give you some trivia. I bet you didn't know this, Gene.
Okay.
That the first time that Joy Styles ever said, "Oh my God," it was during a Mike Awesome match.
I did not know that. That's interesting.
And the only reason I did that was because I was hunting on YouTube to see if Joy Styles had said anything about Awesome, just to see, you know, whether it was legit. And after he killed himself, what he would say about that. And I got an interview with Joy Styles, and he talked about the first time he said, "Oh my God." So
that's fun.
Yeah, it is. It's really neat. He's like turned to Paulie and said, "Can I say that on TV?" And Paulie says, "You can only say that. You can start screaming it." So that was part of that. Speaking of Paulie, he comes out. You know, the people was going to go nuts for this interview.
Oh yeah, they were waiting for him, and just like any time Paul Heyman gets a microphone in his hand, he delivered. It was good stuff, and I guess my favorite thing is the, "I've got two words for you, Matt freaking Hardy," and Edge and JBL up are counting three on their fingers, you know.
Yeah, it's like, wait, I had this guy during the whole thing when I worked with was, you know, the Suck It, when that was huge. Everybody was saying Suck It all the time. Yeah. And this stupid guy said, he goes, "I got two words for you guys," because we was giving him hell. He goes, "Suck my dick, motherfuckers. Suck my dick." But that's not two words, you know? God,
come not even
on.
Close. Jesus.
But loved the interview. Loved what he did, as always. Then we had the main event. Well, I guess that was the main event, but then there's a whole bunch of stuff that happens. yeah. What was this? I mean, first, it was supposed to be the Dudleys against Sandman and Dreamer, right?
Right. Right.
And I'm a big, huge Sandman mark. I've talked about it before on here. Actually like Dreamer and Dudley. I like all four of these guys. But huge Sandman mark. But all of a sudden, we have the Blue World Orders out there.
Yeah, and again, like I talked about earlier, you know, you could have had the BWO in a match just because, hey, it's the ECW. We got to have them on there. But I think this was the effective way to get the BWO out there, to get Balls and Axel out there, and guys that they wanted to make an appearance and get their pop, but we weren't, you know, subjected to a 10-minute BWO versus Balls and Axel tag team match, which may not have been, you know, the greatest thing in the world. So I think it was kind of effective, especially because, you know, you were going, this was a one-off show. There were no real angles, and they didn't even try to play it off like there was any heat or any angle between the Dudleys and Dreamer and Raven. You know, I mean, it was just Raven, Dreamer and Sandman. And so I guess this was all just to, you know, add a little preamble to all that. But it was fun. It was, you know, like I said, I don't know as far as from a wrestling perspective how entertaining just a straight up match between the Dudleys against Dreamer and Sandman would it be. So it, you know, it added, is what, God, before it was over, I mean, you had Kid Cash and all these different people that made appearances, you know, before it finally broke back down into somewhat of a tag team match. But I hate that the worst part about watching anything ECW on the network is the music being edited. So you get Sandman coming out to that, you know, elevator version of Inner Sandman. And, man, I'm telling you, I know we talked about it on the show that we did, but the absolute highlight, besides meeting King Kong Bundy, of WrestleCade to me last year was Sandman making his entrance for that battle role. And he came out to Enter Sandman. He came, like, 2 feet from us come over there and poured beer down somebody's throat and the whole nine yards. And it was so cool to experience the Sandman entrance in person. And it just really sucks when you're watching these network shows and you got to watch Sandman come out of this generic rock.
I agree. I was at the next to last the real ECW before they closed in Poplar Bluff, Missouri, the show. And I mean, for him to come out to the music, the whole nine yards, it's really awesome. It's fun to watch. It's fun to be there. I actually seen it on a show last year on one of these iPay-per-views or something like that off of I can't remember which one. GCW, one of the Joy Janela things when Sandman came out.
Yeah.
Huge pop for him then, too. It was pretty awesome. We had all kinds of shit going this match. We had, like you said, we end up with the Impact players jumping in at the end. Beulah and Francine went at it. Cat fight. Spike Dudley came out. We had a flaming table. Then we had the Dudleys came out. The Dudleys won. And then we ended up with Stone Cold coming out, which I absolutely loved that stuff.
Yeah, it was, you know, that was fun. You know, it's a harsh reminder that, oh yeah, this is a WWE show. you lose that whole ECW vibe, in my opinion, when the biggest star ever in WWE comes out. But he has an ECW, you know, background, so it works. But yeah, the stuff with him, it was fun. Of course, you know, there was all that shittiness that went on that you really don't pick up on camera, that you hear about after the fact with Meanie and JBL and that whole scenario. But a hell of a way to close the show with Sandman and Austin, you know, having a beer chugging up there at the top of the ramp. So
I thought that was really cool. I thought it was also cool because everyone beat up Eric Bischoff. So
yes, Bischoff took all those finishes, which is surprising. I'd forgotten about that when they started doing it. I was like, oh god, I forgot that Bischoff took almost everybody's finish in the ring
after Foley dragging down there. Yeah, a comment about it. He was talking about being in the ECW arena. He said he don't know if there was ever be anyone, you know, be a bigger heel than him at the ECW arena. He said he just, you know, had a great time doing what he did that night. So it came off really good, everything he was doing. Like you said, it did, you know, remind you it was a WWE event with Stone Cold coming out. But, you know, Stone Cold did have the history of the of the WWE. We had Meanie on here before. You know, the actual guy, Meanie is a fantastic guy. He was like on episode 5 or 6, really one of the first episodes that we done. Super nice guy, but for some reason that character always used to just drive me crazy. I don't know why. I just, with all the dancing and everything. But I hated it. You could see the blood all over me.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, I've never really, I've listened to a couple of shoots about that was all about. Mainly it was just JBL was drunk and being an asshole, so.
Yeah, and split his head open, and then later Joey Styles beat up JBL in another scenario, which is just hilarious that, you know, is a real thing that happened, but it did.
All right, Gene, go ahead, tell me, was it really that good?
Yes, in my opinion, it was. That was the closest thing to an authentic ECW show that you were ever going to get at that point. Like I said, there was Austin, there was the WWE guys in attendance and all those little things. But, and especially if you compare this to future quote-unquote ECW events and the ECW brand revival and all the crap that was to come in the future, if the ECW would have had the book closed on it after this night, I would say it was a perfect reunion or whatever you want to call it, and it would have been a good way to put a bow on the end of ECW. And for people who weren't around or didn't experience the original ECW, it was a way to kind of get a taste of it for one night.
I agree 100%. It really was that good. I think it's what's funny is we should do a little bit of research on how many other ECW Arena reunion shows happened after this one.
So. Oh, God, yes. All those hardcore homecomings and all that shit, yeah. It was an epidemic after this.
Because it was very successful, and so everybody wanted to repeat it. All right, guys, remember, same bat time, same bat channel. On the best of the wrestling podcast in the business. Be there. And you guys know, and Gene, you know this, I love my mama.
Indeed.